Sun came up at dawn today. Glass windows reflect its rays. Sip coffee my husband made. At my desk, I'm getting paid. Tonight I'll walk a narrow road, record a podcast episode. At 7, it'll still be light. Everything will be all right. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Narrow Pod Between Pages. That was a little poem I wrote this morning about recording today and other nice things, and it made me feel really nice, so I decided to read it out for you all. You're still on the right podcast. You aren't suddenly in some poetry corner. This is page 145 of The Narrow Road Between Desires by Patrick Rothfuss, and we're going to talk about it. Limp. Nettie looked down, then up at Bast, holding a finger to her lips. Bast nodded and stepped back from the doorway as Nettie stepped inside, deftly detached the sleeping baby from her nipple with her free hand, and carefully tucked the child into a small wooden cradle on the floor. The dark-eyed girl emerged from behind her mother and went to peer down at the baby, hands clasped behind her back. "Call me if she starts to fuss," Nettie said softly. The little girl nodded seriously, sat down on a nearby chair, and began to gently rock the cradle with her foot. Nettie stepped outside, closing the door behind her. She walked the few steps necessary to join Bast, rearranging her bodice unself-consciously. In the sunlight, Bast noticed her high cheekbones and generous mouth. Even so, she looked more tired than anything, her dark eyes heavy with worry. The tall woman crossed her arms over her chest. "What's the trouble then?" she asked wearily. Bast looked confused. "No trouble," he said. "I was wondering if your husband had any work." Nettie uncrossed her arms, looking surprised. "Oh, there isn't much for me to do at the inn," Bast said, and ended the page. I'm Amrita.
I'm Forever Ven.
And I'm Nick. I'm still here.
Yay.
So Nettie's expecting trouble.
Yeah. I mean, given what her husband usually is up to, I'm not surprised.
And that's probably why, right? Is usually her husband has gotten a fight or
exactly.
And so she's the one who has to deal with the fallout.
Yeah. Yeah, I really feel bad for her.
Bast had asked about her husband. I was wondering if your husband was about. Mm-hmm. And so she immediately goes to, okay, what's the trouble?
Yeah, like crosses her arms like, okay, now that my baby's settled away and that's taken care of, let's tell me what the bad news is.
Yeah, I like how seriously the little girl takes her job.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's precious.
It is really sweet.
The clasping of the hands behind her back and peering down. And it's all very, I can see it all very clearly in my mind's eye.
What do you make of Bast noting her conventionally attractive beauty standards, her high cheekbones, her full mouth, her tallness?
I take it as something that Bast just sort of does naturally all the time as a creature of desire. You know, he's always noting things around him that he finds desirable, is what my read.
Yeah, I mean, that's perfectly said. He's always evaluating people in regards to their he seems to often evaluate people in regards to how attractive he finds them. And that might be something we all do subconsciously. So like we just get an insight into what's going on in Bast's mind, which is the beauty of fiction.
Were you thinking something else, Nick, or along the same lines?
No, not at all. I think it to me, it calls up some continuity with the Kingkiller books, where Quoth is accused, not wrongly, of making every woman very, very beautiful.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, in this book, now I'm treading lightly here, but you'll notice that it seems to me that they have taken steps to remedy that, in that, for instance, when Emberly is depicted in the artistry, you would say she's not conventionally beautiful by whatever conventional standards we're talking about. And other, by what I, by that, I mean, she's a little plump, which isn't to say she's not beautiful because of that. But that to me seems like maybe a nod or a departure from previous work of Patrick's, if you follow what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think so. And I also think, you know, I'm not trying to critique this. I just want to draw out a conversation. I think that they are called out as maybe striking features without making them too specific. Contrast that with how Quoth describes Denna as, you know, having like very pale skin, very red lips, very dark hair. You know, these are all Western features. And I think the critique that's emerged is that it's not necessarily right to like put those features as more attractive than others. And so where you might read this as, you know, taking a as you say, like the depictions of Emberly departing somewhat, just sort of like removing these from those like extremely extremely specific features and more general like striking ones that set her apart.
Yeah, the red lips in particular, I remember being so annoyed because it's like her lips were red without applying any lip stain. And it's like somehow desirable to like not use makeup and that kind of thing. Yeah, just the very typical way to make a woman seem, you know, she's beautiful without trying. And yeah.
Now, I'm not a doctor, but it seems to me that if you had extremely red lips without applying any makeup, wouldn't that be some kind of sign of like, I don't know, some kind of disorder, like too much blood in your face?
Too much blood in your face.
Yeah, you got the blood and face disease.
It's that southern syphilis.
But yeah, I agree with what you're saying. One difference, I think, in the way Quoth does it and like Bass here is this is his inner monologues, so to speak, and Quoth is narrating. So one might say, you know, a charitable reading might be that Quoth is trying to make everyone seem beautiful in his retelling of it. Like he's embellishing.
Gilding.
Yeah. Whereas this is Bast's supposedly like honest thoughts. Like we don't have any context here that Bast is telling this to someone. So it's a little bit different.
It is. Actually, that's a good point. To me, it's even more removed from Bast. It's like a fourth person omniscient or fifth person. I forget which person, but it's an omniscient narrator, right? So it's even outside of Bast, similar to how the frames are narrated. And while it how sort of follows Bast. Sorry.
No, I'm sorry. I need to interrupt. How many perspectives are there then? Because I didn't know it went to fifth.
Cursory Google time. I almost typed in cursory Google into Google.
Because like at this point, it's like we're in the 11th dimension with the omniscient perspective of God.
Oh, I know. I know there's more points of perspective in like 3D space, like in game design. You can have like fourth and fifth person perspective. It looks like a cursor Google into, and this took me to the dictionary, is it just goes up to third person.
In as far as writing?
As far as prose. First person being narrated, second person, the way Harrow the Ninth is written, where there's someone saying, you do this. And then third person is outside. And then, yeah, there's third person, further subdivided to third person omniscient and third person limited.
Okay. So the third person is the one who has all seeing or a limitation of all seeing.
Yeah. Third person is like outside of the story.
First person would be
party, you might say. Yeah. And then it's, I think that this, the distinction is that omniscient is like this, where it kind of, third person limited would be, it only shows you the inner life of one person. I'm not sure if we ever actually see Bast thoughts, but it does follow Bast around. And then third person omniscient would, I guess, show you the thoughts of any character.
Thank you for that. I needed that.
In this, we don't get anyone other than Bast, right? Like the inner thoughts?
we don't get Nettie's in our thoughts. We don't get, do we get Costrels? I'm just thinking back over characters that we've covered recently.
I don't think Rothfuss ever does. In my experience, it's very confusing, or at least like disorienting, to jump between thoughts. I can't think of any book I've read recently that jumps around within a chapter. Like, obviously, Game of Thrones is a great example of a series that has multiple points of view, but it always follows one character.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It almost never, in the middle of a scene, will jump around.
Jump up, jump up, and get down.
One more thought on the page is, what do we think Bast is trying to do here? Like, he probably doesn't actually need work from Jessam. Right, he says, there isn't much for me to do at the end of the page. But
he's got two objectives, right? One is he's probably gathering some intel for how he's going to dispose of Jessam. At least he needs to know where Jessam is.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because that's his obligation. He has to make him go. And then he had some other thing he had to do. I forget.
Get carrots.
Oh, carrots, right. Yeah, carrots. Maybe he's here to get carrots.
Maybe.
I've read the book, so I won't comment.
Oh, you know.
Oh. No. Thank you for keeping it to yourself. And we'll keep other things to ourselves.
On another
narrow page. Yeah.